Welcome to the Lorehounds podcast. We are the Lorehounds, your guides to psycho history. I'm John.
And I'm Marilyn. This is our coverage of Foundation on Apple TV Plus, Season 3, Episode 3, When a Book Finds You. If you want to get in contact with us, send us an email to empire@thelorehounds.com or head to our Discord server from the link tree in the show notes.
And if you like what you've heard and you want to support us or get ad-free and bonus content, you can check the same link tree for our Patreon and Supercast subscription options. Marilyn, we are a third-ish through the season. And I don't know about you, but this show is cooking.
I'm having the time of my life. This is my favorite episode. And I keep saying they get better and better, but this, given some of the content, how could it not be?
Absolutely. You want to give us your detailed hot take?
Well, first of all, I'm only now all the way far into it for listeners, but pretty short after when I first saw it. I'm sharing the realization that I had shortly after watching episode 2 that Han Pritchard's first name is the same as a certain Solo's first name. And now I want to ask George Lucas if he decided to name his own swashbuckling intrepid hero after Asimov's character.
That's funny because I'm reading the books alongside the series and it stuck out more to me in the book. Seeing it written really made me go, oh, sure, that's Han Solo. That's the same archetype.
Sure, sure. Of course, this Han is buckling a lot more swashes than the Pritchard book Han ever did. But
yeah, for sure.
Fine, whatever. Oh, and I wanted to say, before watching this episode, I heard a story from Marketplace Tech about using AI to predict where riots may occur. And experiments with AI conducting warfare. Shades of the Prime Radiant and psychohistory. Not to mention robots. So, you know, it's coming upon us. It might not be all together here yet, but...
Hello, Demerzel.
Watch this space.
That's the name. Somebody should name it. Well, I'm sure it's not public domain, but somebody should name an AI Demerzel.
That would be fun. Maybe people can make their own private AI information dumps and call them Demerzel. Or change the name of one of the automated speakers in the house and say, hey, Demerzel.
That'd be fun. I would do it.
Turn down the heat. Yeah, watching the opening sequence, I'm quite sure that it's the mule's face that we see right at the end, there on the right. And I'd often wondered why the last Empire statue in the long lineup that dissolved one by one had long hair and a beard, and of course, now I know.
Right.
Thank you, Dude Day.
Oh, I love Dude Day. He's Dude Day the chillest.
Amazing. Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
I saw somebody on Reddit, by the way, at the time we're recording this, only episode 1 has aired, but I lurk on Reddit to see how people are reacting to the other episodes. I obviously can't really participate because I have too much future knowledge, but I saw somebody being like, I don't think I can handle this Day who's not like serious anymore. He's not like angry and a conqueror. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, oh, wow. No, I love this guy. I mean, this is... First of all, it's a joy to watch Lee Pace take on a different character as the same sort of person. And secondly, it's just nice to get a change of pace for this empire. Like, I wouldn't want each generation of Kleons to be the exact same. That would be exhausting.
And boring. And, not using these incredibly gifted actors to their full potential.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, each episode thus far is better than the one before it, though. I just think this one is the best. And they have another crucial scene which touches on a major part of my life, the importance of information and people to help us find it. Hello. The sets and costumes are so incredibly beautiful and beautifully realized. And wow, would I love to work in that library.
Absolutely. What doesn't it look nice? Now, I'm very confused about how you read a book of this kind. Like, why don't you tell me, Madam Librarian, how I would approach reading a book like this?
Well, I'm reminded of codexes and hieroglyphics. And of course, if you've been living with the Prime Radiant for 3 years, things probably become more immediately comprehensible than if you're like you and I, who just have seen it for a few seconds and say, what? What was that?
Right.
So bottom line, that's not my area of librarian expertise. So I haven't worked in the foundation or the transfer library. So
right.
I'm sure there must be some kind of specialist training, but only if you've come from Second Foundation.
Mm.
Yeah. And of course, the title was a wonderful title for anybody with a librarian mind. It'd be a good conversation starter. So what book has found you recently? But even without all the above, I think it would still be my favorite episode so far. What about you?
I think so, too. I think this season's really finding its footing. You know, again, I was mildly critical. I think, you know, mostly praiseworthy of the first episode. But my criticism of it was, you know, exposition dump. Mm-hmm, and it was such a mild criticism because I think it's necessary.
Right.
And we're done with that, right? We are completely done with that by this episode. I think last episode, maybe we had a remnant or two. But this episode, it just feels like we are just in the world, enjoying the story.
Yep.
I feel like we're zeroing in on important moments, like the meeting of, I almost called him Hober, but Torin and the Mule. You know, Beta kidnapping or rescuing something with Magnifico. With all these different people meeting. And I think that's going to be very exciting. I really enjoyed watching the backstory of this Dawn. That was a surprise for me, right?
So yes.
I was like, oh, this Dawn's just really genuine and just really trying to save Empire. And no, this Dawn actually is someone who understands that he's going to go down as a martyr. Or perhaps only a martyr internally. Like, no one's going to know.
When we get into it more deeply, you'll have to say more about that.
I'm interested
in how you got that reading.
I just am so pleased to see and the exposition of the robot cult, the inheritance, I think you called
it. Yes.
You jotted that down. I wrote a note to go back and jot that down, and then I forgot to. So thank you for saving me.
You're
free. Such good world building, and I love to see even Chill Day can fall into the old wrathful day when he doesn't get what he wants, right? So it's still the same person. It's just a different iteration.
Right. You know, smoothed out by the drugs, but also, as we hear at one point, someone says, you know, are you sure that this isn't making you paranoid already? But it's just not the same thing.
I'm so pleased with this show this season. I mean, I've been pleased with it every season, but this season especially, I'm really enjoying so far.
Yeah,
and I see, by the way, again, you know, only episode one is out, but other reviewers have also gotten screeners, and it seems from the reviews that I've seen online, just like the overall season review that don't have spoilers, people are really happy with the season. And just the reactions to episode one, I've hardly seen a bad review.
Yeah, I mean, I don't dig into them as deeply as you do, but I did listen to Bald News podcast episode about it, and enjoy what they had to say, and they're pretty enthusiastic too.
Oh, good, good.
Which is quite a difference from, you know, season one, certainly.
Yeah, season one had a rough reception. I think season one, you got to set up this like crazy world. You have so much world building to do.
It's true, and that could be very difficult.
And that there were COVID issues with it, and quite honestly. And I said this last season, so it shouldn't be a shock. But Salver Hardin was probably my least favorite casting. I really didn't enjoy the performance kind of the whole time. there were very few points that I enjoyed with that character. So I'm glad that we've moved on completely.
Yeah. And I'm in a different space than you on that, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, I really
enjoyed her a lot. And perhaps partly because having had more of the book stuff to begin with, I enjoyed, you know, the change of gender and the change of race and all those things come in together. I never was troubled by the whole accent thing. I know that was a thing that kind of...
It wasn't even the accent for me. It was just the whole demeanor. But I did not understand what they were doing. It felt like a very confused character. You know what I mean?
It could just be that I was, you know, filling in any gaps with my own knowledge.
And when I watched it, I really didn't have much to fill in with that. I had read briefly the first Foundation novel, but anyway, I don't want to harp on Salver Hardin. Salver Hardin's not here anymore. We got the Mule
for the time being.
We got the Mule.
And you know, Salver Hardin is the first one to say my favorite Asimov line of all time.
Oh yeah,
violence is the last result of the incompetent.
That is a great quote.
It is a good line.
A Hardenism. But I don't think that Salvar Hardin in the show would have said that.
I hear what you're saying.
You know?
I hear what you're saying.
All right. Let's get into the episode, Marilyn. We start off with a partnership. 3 years before the start of the season, a curious Don goes to Trantor's library to ask about Kale's ninth proof of folding, a volume banned by Cleon the 12th. The librarian brings him to view the book alone, and Don is confused as to how the book got back from the Foundation. The librarian sends Don to meet the person who returned it, Gail Dornick. Gail offers Don an escape hatch if he will assist her in saving humanity against Lemuel. In the present, Don accepts a call from Gail in which she tells him it's time to make himself useful and put an enclosure around Kalgan to contain the mule. She also warns Don of the mule's psychic abilities.
So now I'm hearing what you were saying about he's not going to be a martyr. He's looking for a way out when you describe it as an escape hatch, which is very interesting. And I'm not disagreeing with that reading. I've focused more on the fact that he was earnestly doing his best to prevent the end of his, mm-hmm. you know, not just his existence, but the end of empire, the suffering of humanity, all the things that we know that what I call the mule tail in the Prime Radiant are pointing towards.
Yeah, and what I meant by him being a secret martyr was that, you know, to all eyes around, he's just going to be the failing empire of a failing empire.
That's, you know? True. That's true.
And so he's just going to be either a tyrant or an incompetent by the end of this story. But in the end, he's one of the main players that's going to make sure, at least he's intending to do this, he's intending to be one of the main players to make sure that even if empire falls, humanity doesn't.
Right. Right. And who knows how many of the however many gazillion people out there will ever actually know that.
Right.
So.
And I think that's a really cool, really complicated character.
Yes. I'm glad because, of course, the previous Dons were, I won't say they were monochrome, but they kind of, you know, they had
they bled together.
One role to play in right. each season. But now I keep saying, oh, wow, he's doing that. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, right. My gosh, how did this happen? So he's definitely, well, the focus is shifting away from the seeded Day to the one who will become Day.
Right.
So it makes sense.
It's a rising Day, right? Don't they call it at one day. Point?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember under which context, but yes, I heard that phrase. Yeah, I've always loved the library and archive on Trantor, and mm-hmm. it 152 years or so later is no exception. I love the physical form in which this book appeared. Mm-hmm. The construction reminds me of some aspects of the Prime Radiant, the mm-hmm. container construction and that sort of thing. It looks so other than our traditional codex. And yet it serves the same kind of function. So it is, as the librarian says at one point, it's an artifact as well as a source of knowledge and information and all that.
I need to ask you, though, is the librarian telling a real-world fact with usually you don't need gloves to handle it?
Absolutely is.
Okay.
She absolutely is. It's a recent development. Granted, I mean, recent as in, you know, over the last couple of decades as opposed to the preceding however many, you know, years or whatever. But I love, you know, any laborer who tells you to wear gloves is simply trying to intimidate you. You are more likely to damage the book when wearing gloves because you're going to be clumsy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, picture doing any delicate task with rubber gloves on. You know,
right.
It's just silly. Even cloth gloves. But you're far more likely to, you know, bend a corner of a page, break a brittle page off, all those kinds of things. And far more damage than the little oil that is on your skin. But, you know, if you use hand sanitizer ahead of time, then even that is a very minimal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for confirming. This is our librarian expert here, so we need to. When I watched it, I was like, I got to ask Marilyn if that's real.
Well, I need to clarify. I have worked in archives off and on. And any archivist would say I'm not an archivist, I'm a librarian.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's fine. And I accept that designation. And it's helpful to have that kind of archival experience as well. So At the end of the day, it's about getting the information that people need to them in a fashion in which they can comprehend it.
Right.
She has a beautiful line, gorgeous line, chef kiss quality line. She says, "Empire has three heads. Do they all have room for ideas like this?"
Mm.
The idea being, you know, we should be listening to Selden. We should recognize that the planet is in trouble. We should be looking and learning all the information that we can.
Right.
About this thing, which has been driving some parts of the universe.
Right.
For a while now, or the galaxy for a while now. So, I also really loved all the cloak and dagger stuff going on in the lower level. I think David would have liked it too, because he seems to like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it's a reflection, a callback to earlier episodes where you have Dons skulking around in the lower level.
Right.
Which Gale then refers to in the subsequent conversation that we see. And, you know, such a reveal, the person who wants to talk to anyone who ever asks about Kali's proof of folding turns out to be Gale. Which, of course, is partly because, as Don says, you know, Harry Seldon took it out. How did it come back here? And right. That leads to the whole conversation of, well, let me send you to a colleague of mine who has
right.
specifically asked anytime anybody shows any interest in Kali's night proof of folding, you know, please get them in touch.
Right. And this is a really interesting aspect to me is that Gale says, you know, send anybody who asks about this to me.
Mm-hmm.
But she couldn't have predicted that that would be Empire. Because no. she had no idea that the other Selden gave Demerzel and therefore Empire the Prime Radiant.
Right.
I don't think that this Dawn ever exists without the Prime Radiant having been given to Empire.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because how else would he get this kind of in-depth detailed knowledge, which is, I'm sure, being carefully hidden from all but those four beings.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And what a fascinating thing that there's these two Seldons not working against each other, but certainly not working with each other.
Yeah, it's an interesting dance, isn't it? And mm-hmm. I mean, on the one hand, you have a human, however reconstituted, and an algorithm, which is a nice juxtaposition because I've been talking about this a lot. I think I'll talk about it some more tonight. The whole question of can zero and one algorithms truly make a decision that will fit well with human behavior.
Mm.
So you can do the math and the planning and all those, you know, the large scale psychohistory type stuff. And it seems to me you still need that human element.
Right.
And
right.
of course, wanting to keep the second foundation secret, that's baseline from the books. But now we see slightly different reasons, perhaps, for wanting to keep it secret.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it works well. Again, beautiful language. That whole scene was full of these beautiful phrases. To Dawn, the Prime Radiant speaks the language of angels. You know, you're talking about mathematics, and I kept saying, yeah, it's a language, so... There you go. Right. It's a language of angels.
Right. And again, that shows the profound impact that the Prime Radiant had on him as a child.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Now, I'm trying to remember. Was Gale surprised when she found out that Vault Harry had given the Prime
yeah.
Radiant to? Yes, she was.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Yeah. 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 So, and she says at one point, well, I wasn't, you know, she didn't use this terminology, but, you know, I tossed a line in the pond expecting to pull up a little fish and I got the whale, you know, how did this happen? And her knowledge and understanding, every Kleon your age wants an escape hatch and I can be that. So that's where the possible, okay, I can flee all of this approbation and hatred. And I was the one that let the Empire fall apart or whatever, perhaps is one way of looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the reminder of the previous two Dons who did try to escape, and one of them failed. And as far as we know at this point, the other one succeeded.
Yeah, I wonder if that's setting up anything, the fact that there is a rogue line of Kleons out there.
They would be missing an awfully fun opportunity if it didn't make use of it at some point. I think they have to do that. I mean, okay, so this line, I'm speculating here, folks, promise. This line fails utterly and then suddenly uprises the descendant of Dawn and Seraph. And yes, I am your new emperor because I have bloodline.
Yeah, I think that would be very cool. That would be very cool development too. If that happens.
And look, we've done away with clones. You know, I'm not following a robot anymore. And I'm the genuine human who will lead us all into the future.
And they're like, you're not following a what? They didn't know that.
You're right. Fair point. And the messages that, you know, alert themselves, spew out themselves, you read it and you drop it and it disintegrates before it hits the floor.
Right.
I love that. It's really, really cool. And so we also have the thing that the original Prime Radiant did not predict the mule's appearance. I mean, it's there now within the Prime Radiant. So it's not a reflection. It's a reflection of present development rather than projected futures.
Right.
And of course, there's the question of, and I don't know why Dawn didn't ask this, why could Gale predict the mule's appearance? And I think it must be because of the precognitive dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was the only way. I think she got a heads up via that.
Right. And the whole thing about urging the enclosure and whatever.
So
I kind of wonder, would that really have worked?
Yeah,
three years earlier, she might not have had as much intel about the mule as she subsequently got.
Right.
But who knows?
Well, she asks him in the present to do the enclosure. That's in the present now.
Yes. No, that's in the present now.
Right. Just to be clear.
And at that point, she does know that he's a mentalist and cautions him, don't ever meet with him in person.
Right.
Yeah.
I am very, very excited to see where this plotline goes because anything can happen at this point.
Exactly. Which I think is one of the gifts of David Goyer and his fellow writing room and all the rest of it. Even for those of us who have lived with the books for decades, we're still wondering. They're giving us new puzzles. They're giving us new opportunities and options. And, you know, sometimes you might feel some things work better than others, but that's, you know, it's personal preference.
Right. And with the inclusion of the Seldons and the way the Second Foundation was set up, we're pretty unrecognizable in a lot of ways. Well,
almost entirely.
but at the same time, the First Foundation's plotline is pretty close to where it was in the books at this point.
Yes. They're hitting the same marks in a sense, but in very different ways. So it's very cool. I really do like it.
Right. All right. Well, let's take a break and then we're going to head to a party.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co. LLC, used with permission.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
So it's time for a party, Marilyn.
Oh, goody. What kind of party, John?
Well, Beta, Torin, and Han go to the Mule's party where his bard, Magnifico, is playing music. Han tries to approach the Mule, but is scared off by his abilities and flees the planet. Torin approaches the Mule with a drink and plays a game of insults with him, goading the Mule into using a vegetable peeler on his hand. Meanwhile, Beta chats up Magnifico. Torin uses his drones to flash a bright light at the Mule and escapes with Beta and Magnifico, barely making a jump in time. The Mule learns his entertainer is gone.
Yes, I seem to have a recollection, and listeners write in, if I got this completely wrong, book reader listeners write in, the way Beta wows the crowd with her fashion, I think there was something about that in the book that said some of the effect of, okay, Beta, you know, you can impress them with this, that, or the thing. Possibly that she's a foundationer. I can't remember, but it mm-hmm. seemed very familiar. Not in that particular form, of course, but it was certainly a good distraction for Han to slip in and do reconnaissance.
Right. Of course, that doesn't work out.
Yeah, well.
And Torin's got to take it on himself. I will say this one was pushing the Pequila scale, this whole scene.
Oh, I'm telling you.
I looked away. I literally put my fingers in front of my face.
Yeah. No, I just looked down. As soon as I saw the hand reaching for the vegetable peeler, I said,
nope.
I know it's coming. I don't want to watch it. And I didn't.
Yeah. You know, have vegetable peelers really not improved in technology at this point? Like, I feel like at this point you should be able to like push a button and it just like levitates the vegetable and swirls around it till it's unpeeled.
Well, it's a nice idea, but not so much. And if I jump ahead a little bit in my notes here, I think this is a good time. I did not watch this the first time with subtitles. So I didn't catch the first time round that he actually uses the term flighting, F-L-Y-T-I-N-G. And if I'd seen that, I would have jumped on it right away. But I did recognize it subsequently. And now I know that they appear to be invoking something from Norse literature, as well as Scots, Celtic, Old English, and Middle English. It's a tradition in which a scop or a singer will, using perfect meter, rhyme, and melody, insult someone else in the crowd as vilely and thoroughly as possible. And now I'm quite certain, well, I'm certain that in the original concept that nobody in the crowd or the target of the insults or anything was supposed, or the singer wasn't supposed to be harmed.
Well, I guess they never heard of the roast, of the Comedy Central roast.
Yeah. I think that's where a lot of this came from. But it was the bards and the scalds and the singers were considered sacred. Mm-hmm. So the thought of harming them was abhorrent. And yet they could become very political. They could really, you know, stick the knife in and twist it a little. Sorry, bad analogy. at least it didn't stick the vegetable peeler in. So from this, I'm finally realizing that the scriptwriters appear to be doing their best to give a remarkably Norse vibe to this Mule, particularly given his love of feasting, music, and quote unquote entertainment. You know, if you read the sagas, you know anything about Norse literature, or you've even seen some of the TV series, you know that. You know, the Vikings came up with some truly horrific torture deaths and 16 different, quote unquote, creative ways to cause pain and so on. So in that regard, they're definitely in keeping with the tradition, if this is in fact what they're doing. But that doesn't mean I have to watch it.
No.
Do not have to watch it. The one thing they didn't do, he didn't do, was to actually pour salt in it. Because that's what often happens, which ironically is also a way to heal it. But terrific levels of pain.
Well, if I can add one thing on this Norse thing, the actor who is currently playing the mule, the recast, is known best besides this for playing Euron Greyjoy in the Game of Thrones series. That is a character who is from a seafaring, conquering, coastal village raiding society. Sounds very Norse to me.
There you go.
You know, I think that's very interesting that they chose him to come and portray the mule now.
Yeah. Well, and there's even some more horribly ironic resonances here, because the word flighting can be related to the word fear, and it also invokes the word flay, which refers to the removal of skin. So we saw this, you know, literally happening. And flaying alive was one of those dreaded tortures of a variety of cultures. So, you know, this fits right in with, you know, with the incredibly barbaric vibe that they appear to be wishing
to invoke.
Alas, yeah, I didn't need it. I didn't need it, I gotta say. And, you know, whatever else I may think of Torin, who looks remarkably like a boy toy, he does have nerves and a few other body parts of steel.
Yeah.
So, but, and I love the way the actor showed that he knew that he was sticking his head in the mouth of the lion. And that would have been the more comfortable thing to do, in a way, you know?
Right.
Nice quick death instead of, you know, this. So, you know, good on you, Torin. And I really, you know, we said this in a previous recording. I hope that the show decides it's made its point by now and stops all this egregious, off the Pukila scale kind of violence. You know, it's the same sort of thing as we know that when Empire holds up two fingers, everybody kind of goes, what's going to happen now? If it twists, uh-oh, somebody's going to get it.
Right.
So, you know, we don't need to pile on one violent scene after another. At least that's my feeling.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, actually, because I finished reading the original trilogy of the Foundation novels this weekend before we recorded. I was thinking about your beef with this mule. And quite honestly, I think the mule in the book is as violent. It's just off screen.
Yes. Yes. And I never get the sense that the book mule enjoys other people's pain.
I don't know about that. He's explicitly described as psychopathic at one point.
Yes. And I think that's largely demonstrated by his compulsion to take over the universe. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty psychopathic want.
Right. And you know, no book spoilers here. The mule here has said that's his intention, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
I think the first episode, he's like, I've got an appetite.
Right, yes. And that also ties in nicely with the whole Viking ethos. And he's chomping down on an apple while he said it. So, yeah,
right.
It's
right.
All there.
Did you ever see the people who were, what am I trying to say? I want to say they called it a Baltic breakfast or something like that. These...
Do I want to know?
No, it's not bad. Don't worry.
Okay.
It was this TikTok trend or video trend online. They were taking random ingredients, and people were like, this is not how people actually eat. Stop pretending that it is. They would take like a tomato and a pepper and some goat cheese and some drinkable yogurt and like all these random foods, and they would just take a hunch bite. Bite this, and bite all the random foods. That's what it's reminding me of.
I can see why.
Yeah.
I can see why. So back to the Magnifico a bit. The Visisoner is a musical instrument that shows up in the books and does light shows and so forth. And I just thought this was a super conceptualization of the Visisoner.
Yeah. I really liked it.
I really liked it.
That's Visisonar, if you are... listening and you don't have the transcript, or the transcript is acting up, who knows. Don't look it up.
Yeah, you'll be spoiled.
Do not look up the mule.
You will be spoiled.
Yep.
And I'm really excited to see how they're going to use it.
Yeah, me too.
The rest of the series, since, as you say, they, you know, it's connected to the books, but I now have a new concept, which you also came up with, of what they might be doing, and it would be something very sneaky. And
right.
I'm really looking forward to seeing if we're right.
We absolutely cannot talk about it right now, but I think you and I have the same prediction
of
what's going on here.
Yeah, yeah. I also, the second watch, I realized that Han said at some point when he was getting closer to the mule, he said, "You are like me." Or the mule says, "You are like me." Or I can't remember who said it, but I think it was Han who thought it. No, it was the mule. "You are like me." And suddenly I'm thinking, okay, does Han have mental abilities?
Could be.
He actually be a second foundation plant?
I don't know.
In the very office of Mayor Inber.
Right.
Watch this space.
Right. I have no idea.
That would be a fun twist. That would be a very fun twist.
Right. Right. You have a note that somebody looks like a Twi'lek?
Yes. In the dancing crowd, for one moment, I caught a glimpse of a human. And the second viewing, I saw that what I thought were tails coming down, it was actually a hairstyle. But go back and look at it and tell me they're not inspired by the Twi'leks. I think that's the right term from Star Wars.
Yeah, no, the Twi'leks are usually the ones dancing.
With the two.
All right, I'm going to go back and look.
The two.
Yeah.
I can't remember the proper name for their...
Oh, I can never remember. There is a word for it.
Their dangly organs. Yes, there is a word for it. And I don't want to be discourteous. And then there's the race that has three.
That's, I believe you're referring to the Togruta.
The Togrutas, exactly. Yeah. And I want to make sure that I was correct and I didn't call them a Togruta.
The Togruta are very rare. The Twi'lek are everywhere.
Okay, so Twi'lek is what I meant. So I wonder if that was just another fun nod to...
Yeah, could be.
To Star Wars.
I mean, Star Wars owes something to Asimov. George Lucas took a lot from Foundation.
You don't say. But Dune, even more, my lord.
Oh, yeah.
The more I think about it, the more I say, oh, my gosh. I mean, you were actually calling them Mentats at one point.
I know.
Yep.
Mentalics.
Well, you know, I see why.
Right. Well, I don't think they're even called Mentalics in the books, though. That's a show term.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, unquestionably. But, it's a useful term.
Yeah.
And I think I had, I can't remember if I've caught myself up on this, but listening to Baldwin's coverage, I realized that the mule's entertainer had preceded him on Calgon in the very first scene, the first episode. Mm-hmm. I just thought that the music we were hearing was Bear McCreary's score. And in point of fact, it was diegetic.
That's very cool.
Think more about this. And can I just take a note? I have not said this yet. I am ashamed. Bear McCreary's music is, again, fabulous.
We got to call him back. He was on the pod before. Let's get him back.
Oh, that'd be fun. Oh, I would love to talk to him directly, finally. We've crossed paths at Oxenmoot a couple years ago. And in your previous interview, you mentioned that.
I think I did. Yeah, yeah.
And he was all chuffed. He said, oh, wow, that's great. You know, I didn't know because they're all scholars. And which, of course, is a misunderstanding of the full scope of the Oxenmoot Society, the Tolkien Society generally. But that's okay.
He was just nervous.
I know.
Well, let's head on to an escape.
Let us do so.
Day goes to his most trusted commander to get help smuggling him and Song out of Trantor. He offers the commander the Imperial Nanites to cure his daughter's terminal illness. I'm assuming it's terminal. It sounds like it is.
Yes. But there certainly is no known treatment.
Right. As the commander and his family would have to flee too. When Cleon is worried about Demerzel interfering, calling her an it, he tells Song she is secretly a robot. After expressing doubts about the plan, Song gives a secret symbol to Demerzel signaling that she is a member of the sect, the Inheritance, and believes the robots will ascend again. Demerzel erases her memories and sends her home, and Day rages.
So just to clarify, we're doing here what we've done before. We're melding two scenes together.
Right. You know, right.
Earlier in the later one, so in case listeners are...
I have three scenes, actually, that I put together.
Yes, there's three in there. Can I just say I felt really stupid while I was reading this out, and I said, oh, yeah. They're trying to smuggle Song out of... What was that first episode title? A Song for the End of the World. I see what you were doing there, David Goyer.
I like it. Yeah, I didn't put that together until just now.
Give Rabbit time, and she always finds the answer.
Great job, everybody.
Yes.
Well, I mean, first of all, absolutely loving, what, and I said this before, but watching Day rage, watching Lee Pace really get to channel that imperial rage again.
Smashing another family heirloom.
Right. That was fantastic. And these antiques are never going to survive this rain.
No. Who knows how much of, you know, all the Trantor is going to survive this rain.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And Demerzel's meddling with memories again. So.
Yeah, that was really too bad. Although, you know, Song asks when she notices that Day keeps referring to Demerzel, is it? And he finally, before he tells her, she says, hey, if the world is going to end, why keep secrets?
Right. That's fair.
And neither of them had any way of knowing just exactly what that secret was and the consequences it would have for Song.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. I suppose the reason why it never even occurred to her is because her religion teaches that they are gone entirely, but that they will return.
Right.
And so to find out that one has returned, as Demerzel says, you know, I had to do this because she was afraid that if Song went back to her people and told her about it, as she says, as Demerzel says, I just deprived the sect of something that might have breathed new life into their flame.
Right.
So she's putting out a fire before it's even started.
Right.
In her view. Although, you know, the way everything is heading towards chaos, having a bunch of people on Mycogen suddenly rising up and saying, we love robots. You know,
but are there any other robots even scene, around, right?
Part of the whole territory. Yeah, but anything this massively tied in with a religion that has been held so tightly that, you know, threat of death is not steering people away from it. It, you know, picture the millennial kinds of fervor and, you know, for Christians as if suddenly, yes, here is Christ right now embodied and I've seen him and so on. I mean, yes, that happened in the Christian Gospels, but still, the literal effect of it happening. That, just imagining what kind of chaos that could produce on our own world.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
Yeah. Well, I am really enjoying the relationship between Day and his commander buddy, because this is, I think, the first time we've ever seen a Day have a genuine relationship with anyone outside of the inner circle.
It absolutely is. And not just a relationship, but a friendship.
Right.
It is very clear. That lovely quote where the captain says to him, you do command some small loyalty. And Day says something to the effect of, I love faint praise.
Yeah, I live for faint praise. You wrote
I live for faint praise. Thank you. That, I had it written down somewhere, but I've lost it somewhere in all the things I wrote. Which,
And Lee Pace could sell any of these lines. You know, I will always buy what he's cooking.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of the theory of Day's reaction is that Demerzel actually comes up and strokes his face.
Yeah.
And it's expressing, without words, her love for him. And he is just utterly, utterly disgusted. And you know, said, are you kidding me? So it only made everything worse.
Right.
For him.
And of course, this is after we had a whole season with a Day that was making love to Demerzel.
I know. It's kind of ironic, but I think the realities of the situation between, you know, knowing that it's been predicted, you know, 4 months to the end of this whole thing, it's right before their ascensions. All of these liminal spaces, these turning points, the pressure of all of that coming together makes Demerzel look a very different character in their eyes.
So, no, I agree. You know, I did say, you know, this is his first relationship out of the inner circle. I guess I'm selling Song a little short, but even her relationship, I feel, is a little bit transactional. with the drugs.
Oh, unquestionably. Unquestionably. No, as I say.
The escape. Like, it's not just the drugs, but it's the escape, right?
I would not say that he is friendly with Song.
No, and I'm sure
and
that...
he is friendly with the commander.
Right, right. And he and countless other Kleons have been, you know, friendly with and you know, charming with women that they mm-hmm. that they seek as conquest, not as lovers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little bit more than that with Song, like more than it has
it is.
Been with
no, it is.
It's not
it
I is. Don't want to sell it short. Like, it definitely, like you're saying, it is more than mm-hmm. than just
meaning.
The conquest that the previous yeah. days have wanted. But at the same time, I do think there's a transactional nature to the level of escape and the drug access that makes it a little less heartwarming to me than the commander.
Oh, no. You know? And, you know, how many times have we seen a day who is not affected by his drug?
Yeah.
So a relationship that's based not only upon a drugged experience, but the person giving him the drug. I can't think of that as, you know, a free and open friendship, you know, friendship for the sake of
right.
friendship.
Right.
I like you because of who you are, not what you can do for me.
Right. So. And he even makes her give him the drugs before he will tell her
yes.
about Demerzel.
Yes, yes. And she sees this as a sign of growing paranoia and says, no, I don't want to give him more.
Mm-hmm.
But does finally yield because, you know, power imbalance, come on.
Because religious psychosis is a very powerful drug.
and Song could never say no to him without significant consequences. So again, very unequal
yeah.
partnership.
Yeah.
In that sense. Oh, and a newsflash, watching the opening sequence again. Just before we see the Prime Radiant filling the screen and starting to rotate, there's a scene of a flat, wide open stretch that looks a little bit like an open desert with sparkly gold sand. And at the end of the stretch is a tall statue of a woman, and this woman is imitating the exact same gesture that we saw Song give when she was signaling to Demerzel with the finger of the right hand.
Oh, wow. Very nice. What's going on now?
Yeah, seriously. I think we're going to see more of the inheritance at some point.
Yeah, I think that very well could be. Very well could be. Well, why don't we move on to a parlay?
Mm.
Dawn offers a truce to the mule and to make him an Imperial Viceroy and gives him access to the Jumpgate Network if he agrees. The mule already has a Jumpgate. He's taken it over and he refuses Empire's demands, proceeds to painfully kill a soldier, and refuses to help the soldier enjoy it now that Magnifico is gone. He's so sad that Magnifico is gone. He's not in the mood to lighten up the load here. Dawn tells the other Kleons and Demerzel he wants to ask the council for permission to move, but he's refused by Day. The middle chair refuses. I love the way he says that.
Yes, yes, yes. Trying to make it not personal, mm-hmm. you know, because you're my kid brother and I really love you and I'm sorry that I had to do that. And oh my God, I missed your ascension.
Well, we'll get there in a second. I wanted to.
Yes, we will.
So I ordered it in this way for a reason because I was like, I don't want to end on the mule's depravity. I want to end on a nice moment.
I'm very thankful that you don't wish to end on depravity, John.
I try. That's one of my mottos.
You do actually. Very well. A lovely exchange before the meeting of the three of them, before the meeting with the mule, between Dawn and Dusk. Dawn handles Dusk brilliantly one more time, calling him a repository of past wisdom and experience. And interestingly, when it comes to this question of yes or no to the mule, Dusk is speaking from experience. He's looking to the past. You know, this has happened before, it'll happen again. Why the big deal? And he almost, it's like he looks at a little more closely than just a random question. Says, so, you know, why are you pushing this so hard anyway?
Yeah.
And Dawn, you know, kind of channels it very skillfully around and said, well, you know, I'm trying to stop the end of our dynasty in 4 months so he can avoid the whole what are your information sources thing. And Dusk actually refers to him as Day at this point because he's acting like Day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's taken on the mantle. He's had his ascension. He's, you know, thinking ahead, making decisions, he's taking on responsibility for the Empire. Even if Dust thinks he's making, you know, wrong choices about how to best serve that, he still recognizes that.
Right.
And I think he does. Does he actually call him Day the 24th at this point?
I don't remember.
We get that he will be the 24th day if he gets to that point.
Yeah, right. Well, they got 40 days, right? So, or 4 months, was that it? They got 4 months, and he only needs another few days, right? So I guess they're all right.
He has, you know, one day too many, some people might say.
Oh, gosh.
With a capital D.
Oh, gosh. So, I mean, yeah, I think you're right that Dawn is, you know, Dawn is a very agile player. It's really interesting to see Day push back for once.
Yes, I like your choice of that word. It's a very good word, agile.
Yeah.
He can respond in the moment. And I really don't think I've seen him lose his cool outwardly. I mean, inwardly he might be, you know, saying, oh shit, why can't I, whatever, but he doesn't show it.
Right. And remember last episode that this Dawn said, hey, I'm not a drinker, so I'm not going to be drinking.
I do remember that quite vividly.
Well, when we get back, we're going to break that rule. We're back for strength, wisdom, and fortitude.
Very valuable qualities we can all use more of.
When Cleon the Seventh became Day, he asked the stars for strength, wisdom, and fortitude. His advisor handed him all three. I love that line.
Yes.
The Cleons all share a flask of hard liquor and have a nice family moment. There's really not a lot more to say here. I adored this scene.
I did too. I think it's the only time I can remember the three faces of Empire coming together as a family.
Yeah, me too. You
know, historical traditions, got to pass it on. Oh, God, I'm sorry I missed your ascension. And okay, don't worry about it. Oh, you did the thing, right? You know, you did the family tradition. And you know, and you got it here now, don't you? And it's, of course I do.
I was so worried it was going to be a hazing ritual.
Oh, interesting.
And it wasn't. It was really a genuine thing, and that was nice.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I went to college as a man.
That occurred to me. No. That never occurred to me. I think because I thought the vibe was so different from that.
And that's why I didn't pledge to a fraternity.
Very sensible. Very sensible, yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, like you said, I don't think we've seen them truly bond like this before. We've seen them argue. We've seen them, you know, be a little chummy sometimes. In the past, when we see them share meals, they're just acting exactly like the other ones, right? That's like the whole point. They're identical. Mm-hmm. They're parallel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they've always been parallel, but now they're different enough where they are a family, and a family is messy, and a family has differences, and a family is able to compensate for each other's ups and downs.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. The first time I watched it, I could have sworn I saw Don actually spew out the liquor the first time.
Thought, he was struggling.
He doesn't drink, but I watched it more closely this time and he was gagging on it, but he did not spit it out.
So yeah. He holds it down. Good for him.
For somebody who does not drink. Well, he knew this was a really important moment. It was symbolic. It was bonding. It was, you know, time with his brothers being just brothers. And as I say, I think that was certainly the only time I remember seeing this. But, oh, one thing about the when the discussion when they're making this decision, and Demerzel says, "We cannot guarantee that the mule will hurt us, but the council will if we give them any opportunity to do so." And Day pays attention to this. That really seems to tip the balance for him, which is interesting when you consider how he was raging in her face the last time we saw the two of them together. So,
I think actually those scenes were reversed.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It happens.
Yeah,
after.
I just flip things over.
But even so, it's he's been slanging her already, calling her it and everything for some time now. So clearly he still listens to her when she's giving suggestions or advice or right. whatever you want to call it. As long as they don't interfere with him personally.
Yeah.
She is still wise. She still has knowledge.
Right.
And I think this day is smart to recognize she has far more knowledge than he'll ever have. So
yeah.
And for all of his sybaritic behavior, he doesn't want the Empire to end either.
Yeah.
So in a decision, you know, this it's serious. It's not it's more serious than they think at this point. Then he is willing to listen to Demerzel. So I just thought that interesting.
Right. It does also remind me of the New Republic in Star Wars, how they are always so hesitant to act that it bites them in the butt in the end, right? And that's true in canon and legends. And we see that even in the Rebellion, right? In Andor, we saw this hesitancy, like, oh, do we really know if it's true? Mm-hmm. Can we follow this intel? Mm-hmm. And this has been a joke, and that's been going around. And I say a joke, but it's a very serious thing that people are joking about, because satire is often the way to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that the people trying to do the right thing will carefully plan things out and go through a fair process and hear everyone's voices, and it takes them forever to do that, and the people trying to do the wrong thing will just do it.
Yeah.
And it is a structural disadvantage that you need to keep. You need that structural disadvantage to be able to consider yourself the good side, right? Like, you need some kind of process.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you have to ask yourself at some point, like, at what point do we step in? And do we stop the evil?
Sure. And there may be contingencies, like, you know, we're still so small. If we don't all agree on this decision,
right,
it won't work even for those of us who are really committed to it.
Right.
And I think there's an interesting parallel there with how Asimov set up the foundation. The tension between, on the one hand, oh, the Seldon plan will save us. The best thing we can do is inaction.
Mm-hmm.
And the individuals who say Seldon helps those who help themselves, and we got to do something.
Feels a lot like religion, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
There's debates over that, right? This you know, free will versus free predestination. Will versus fate. And,
yep. And yeah, it requires a certain concept of divinity, however you want to label that, which not all of us necessarily hold with either, but that's another whole conversation. So,
oh, you can press the button to call your Calvinist.
And if you ever want to see a frustrating meeting, go to a business meeting for worship, or a meeting for worship for business. you may get an earful. Or you may not, you know, obviously each one is individual, and it's a necessary decision. It's just like when groups started using consensus-based decision-making. Nobody ever said it was efficient.
Yeah.
Nobody ever said it was fun. But at the end of the day, if a decision is based upon consensus, it's more likely to be carried out because everybody feels like they have a part of it.
Right.
Whereas if you just arbitrarily say, this is what we're doing, those who agree with you will be very happy. Those who disagree with you will feel not heard. You know, their wisdom is ignored. Why are they out to get me? You know, it kind of can escalate from there. So there's problems to any particular form. Unless it happens to be based on somebody omniscient. But as we're finding out in this series, even the omniscience of mathematics, things go wrong. So then what do you do?
Right. You have a speculation section. Do you have anything that you haven't brought up yet?
Let me see. Oh, I just thought it was funny that at first I thought that Song was going to desert Day because she's afraid of robots. So we got another Markleyism going there.
Oh, no. No, a Markleyism has to go like an entire season of...
Oh, well, too bad.
You gotta really hammer down incorrectly on a theory.
Okay.
Resolved in the same episode. I don't think, don't worry, don't beat yourself up over it.
believe me, I wasn't going to, even if it had gone a whole series. And it's interesting, the first time I was struck by how frequently Demerzel changes her outfits. And I kind of wonder, why is this, apart from a reason to display the fabulous skills of the costume makers for this series? you know, and I guess it could convey some sense of humanity, because robots wouldn't necessarily care about fashion, but of course humans would.
Right.
And also giving a sense of change over time, so that that whole thing of, you know, how is this person living forever? At least there's some sense of, you know, oh yeah, okay, they're changing, their you know, style sense is different and so on. But I don't know, it just seemed extraneous. But I don't know. Does that stir anything in you, or am I just over speculating?
Yeah, I don't know quite why that's happening, but I agree with your thoughts. I think that that's a good direction to go in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, the street version is she's a clone and
right.
Right. Not a robot. And so every so often a new one's candidate. So maybe that's
right. Where the just maybe everybody thinks that there's like 10 Demerzel clones running around and each one has a different dress on. And
There you go.
And they all, for some reason, are always the same age.
So here's a question for you. If the prime radiant reflects nothing but Selden's mathematics, how is it that the mule tail suddenly pops up in the prime radiant?
It's a good question. I think that in this world, in this version, not in the books, but in the show version, there's some kind of like surveillance network that Selden set up where data is constantly being fed into the prime radiant so you can see what's going on in the universe.
Even though Volterra doesn't have a prime radiant anymore.
Right. Right. But the prime radiant can be in multiple places at once, right? So,
well, yeah, it's now in Empire and with Gail Dornick. And I don't think Gail Dornick is feeding anything new. Well, interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe she was, because she kept seeing dreams. And I mean, she first tells Dawn about it 3 years before the actual physical appearance of the mule.
I don't know. I think I'm willing to eat some cereal on this one and just wave that one away.
Sure. Well, I like it because it gives a sense of this isn't just the mathematics. There's capital letter something else.
Yeah, I think that's right. Here.
But of course, that would have horrified Asimov and would have also, I think, horrify a lot of sci-fi people who feel that the religion and the science should be entirely separate, or the spirituality, or the whatever you want to call it.
I mean, there's definitely some more magic in the show than there is in the books, right?
Yeah, for lack of a better word. I really do think there is. It's also interesting to note how much we're seeing about aging and death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, previous episode, we saw Selden aging on Ignis and contrasting it with the Cleon conniptions trying to avoid it. It can potentially raise questions about, well, what am I going to do when my time comes? Well, do I really want to know? I told you that story last time about the nun who would love to know the day of her death because that means she would know what to read next.
Right.
It's an interesting theme that they have really pulled out. I don't think I can point to any instances of it in books. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else for you, John?
I don't think I have any theories that I can talk about. I do have one theory that I kind of want to talk to you about off air. About a certain character at the Second Foundation right now.
Okay.
But I think let's... That'll be fun. Let's talk about it on maybe when we do our feedback episode mid-season, we'll do a little spoiler territory. We'll do a corner at the end where we do some spoiler stuff. I think that'd be fun.
I think that'd be fun too. And I think we're both on pins and needles to see if our shared favorite personal theory
yes, there's a couple comes to really fruition. Good theories going on right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Actually, it'd be fun to have a section in which we encourage book readers to send in their speculations.
Well, Alicia usually calls it the tinfoil hat corner.
Whatever you want to call it, yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, I think we could all put on our tinfoil hats for a little while.
So we designated as the, you know, the speculation / tinfoil hat corner.
That's right. The speculation station. You could dock there for a little while.
I like that much better. Speculation station. Let's run with that.
All right. Well, check out the other shows on the network, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Foundation.
Yes.
You can also get, we're doing Second Breakfast on Tacos this month. And we're doing our Val Kilmer Film Fest for Elevensies. And that will be covering the movie Heat. So those two are subscriber exclusives. You can get those on the Patreon or Supercast links in the show notes, along with our whole back catalog. So go enjoy it. And now's the time. Now that it's the summer, we're a little bit slower on content because the flood of content has finally slowed to a steady river, and that's nice. So it's a good time to catch up on things. make sure you stick around because after Foundation, or I think during Foundation, we're going to have Ellie and Earth coverage done by David.
Mm.
And Alicia's planning some Peacemaker coverage. She also just released, at the time I'm recording with Marilyn, Alicia just released her Superman podcast, but it'll be a couple weeks old by the time this comes out. But still, go listen to it. I hear that Superman is doing great. People are loving it.
Yes, in this future past time frame, I will be seeing it with Bob in a couple of days. And
yeah.
I am hopeful. I am really hopeful. My personal Superman has always been the Christopher Reeves 1977 version. And all the subsequent ones just fell further and further away from that. But people have said it reminds them of that. So
Yeah, people I'm say this hopeful. Is a great Clark Kent.
Yeah, I'm feeling hopeful.
That's great. And so make sure you check out the other shows. As I mentioned, Radioactive Ramblings is doing Fallout coverage. You've got Properly Howard Movie Review currently doing their Bacon Wrap season. You've got Nevermind the Music doing their psychology and music collaboration. Very, very good stuff. You've got, what else you got? Wool Shift Dust is doing Dune now. We've got more coming on Rings and Rituals if you want to go back and listen to that and rewatch season one of Rings of Power. And we've got more Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast stuff coming. So definitely check that out. Marilyn.
Yes. And tomorrow in this recording time, Alicia and I are going to be recording a Whatcha Watchin' episode.
Very good. Another subscriber exclusive.
Uh-huh. And this will be on The Life of Chuck.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to listening to that one. Those are a new subscriber benefit we've been doing where we do these very quick 15-20 minute check-ins on, hey, you know, you watch something, you're excited about it. Why don't we talk about it for just a little bit?
And let's see if Alicia and I together can.
Yeah, it's going to be like 2 hours.
Save it. I'm telling you, 20 maybe minutes. You know, you can live in hope if you want, John.
Every time David pitches me like 15 minute podcast, I'm like, no, it won't be. No, but we did actually do one for. I forgot what show I talked about with him.
Yes, you did.
But that was pretty quick. Well, everyone, go to the Discord, go to our Patreon, Supercast, if you want more. It's all in the link tree in the show notes. For now, I want to say thank you to our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Duve71, Athena A., Tina Lestu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard, and our lore masters, Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., Brian P., SC, Peter O.H., Adam S., Nancy M., Duve71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Matthew M., Sarah M., Andra B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Lestu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K., Bobby C., and Adrian. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week on The Foundation.
Thanks, folks. Bye-bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego Chicken Sandwich, Fuego Fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego Chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty Classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego Chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.